This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Samuel. And now here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Samuel chapter 23 with today's edition of Sandy Adams Radio.
We're in chapter 23, and before we begin, would you join me in prayer? One of my favorite movies is The Fugitive. U.S. Marshal Sam Girard chases escaped convict Dr. Richard Kimball through the forests of Pennsylvania to the streets of Chicago, down the corridors of the hospital where Dr. Kimball used to practice medicine. Somehow, Kimball stays one step ahead of his pursuers. Girard, played by Tommy Lee Jones, is relentless. Kimball, played by Harrison Ford, is innocent. Dr. Kimball is being hunted down for a crime he didn't commit. Well, tonight's chapters could be entitled Israel's Fugitive. For King Saul tracks and chases and plans to murder an innocent man. He too is a relentless pursuer. And yet God is on David's side and helps him stay one step ahead of Saul and his posse. You remember where we're at in the story. Saul, the ruling king, becomes jealous of David's victorious battles over the Philistines and his popularity among the Israelites. And despite David's unquestioned loyalty to Saul, a paranoid Saul views him as a threat. Three times, Saul tries to take his spear and throw it at David and pin him to the wall. Three times, David escapes. Finally, David realizes he can no longer stay in Saul's royal court. It's proving to be hazardous to his health. And in chapter 1, he begins his flight from Saul. He goes to Nob. He flees to Gath. Then he fights to save the city of Keilah. And that's where we begin in chapter 23. Then they told David, saying, "Look, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah, and they are robbing the threshing floors." Now, Keilah was in the plains of Judea, about 18 miles southwest of Jerusalem. And it was being picked on. I don't like it when I see someone being picked on. It was harvest time. And the Philistine raiders, they were stealing the grain. And whose job was it to defend Keilah? And all Israel's territory for that matter. King Saul, of course. That's what kings do. But Saul was too busy fighting his friends and killing his own priests and plotting to catch David than he was to do his own job. He was so self-centered and determined to protect his position, he lost sight of the real enemy and friends. I'm afraid this often happens to we as Christians. Oh, another church in town, or a new home fellowship, or a freshly formed men's group becomes popular, more popular than mine. So much so that members from my group jump ship and join them, and I feel threatened. A brother from another mother, you might say, enters the picture, and we become jealous. And what do? Oh, we circle the wagons. Our focus shifts from fighting the devil and building God's kingdom to defending ourselves from this new sibling. We start chunking spears at David while the Philistines march unopposed. Guys, be careful that we don't act like King Saul. Saul spent all his time and energy protecting his own position and his own authority. You know, he should have trusted God to defend his throne. If he had, God would have protected him. He should have done what God had called him to do. Instead, he went about trying to protect himself. Hey, we'll never win the battle if we forget who it is we're supposed to be fighting. Verse 2, "Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I go and attack these Philistines?'" You see, when he was told that the Philistines had attacked Keilah, it would have been easy for David to have jumped to one of two wrong conclusions. He could have said, "Oh, that's Saul's job, not mine. I'm just going to stay out of it." Or he could have said, "Saul, if he won't do it, I'll just do it." On the one hand, he could have been guilty of apathy. On the other hand, he could have been guilty of presumption. David was guilty of neither. Notice David makes a smart move. Rather than jumping to any conclusion, what does he do? He says, I will inquire of the Lord. It's always good to stop before we jump and ask for God's direction. And the Lord said to David, go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah. But David's men said to him, look, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines? Now remember back in chapter 22 and in verse 1, David is in the cave of Adullam. He's hiding there from King Saul. And here his men are afraid that if they go and attack the Philistines, they're going to be exposed. Saul will know where they are. They'll become a target for Saul. And David doesn't disagree with them. Unlike Saul, he wasn't a tyrant. He hadn't turned a deaf ear to his men. It wasn't his way or the highway. He takes the advice of his men to heart. They're right. You know, I could be wrong. And so he prays again. Boy, that's a big man who can say, I might be wrong. David goes back to the Lord. He could have misunderstood the Lord, so he goes back and he prays again. David was such a different type of leader than Saul. Then David inquired of the Lord once again, and the Lord answered him and said, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into your hand. And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines, struck them with a mighty blow, and took away their livestock. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. Now it happened when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David at Keilah, that he went down with an ephod in his hand. And Saul was told that David had gone to Keilah. So Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. Apparently this is exactly what David's men had feared, that their defense of Keilah would expose them to Saul's attack. Then Saul called all the people together for war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. When David knew that Saul plotted evil against him, he said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here. Then David said, O Lord God of Israel, your servant has certainly heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant. David grabs this ephod, this priestly garment, and he begins to beseech the Lord for wisdom. And the Lord said, he will come down. Then David said, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? You'd think the men of Keilah would be grateful for what David had done for them. Not so. For the Lord said, they will deliver you. They're going to turn you over. They're going to turn their back on you quickly. And so David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah and went wherever they could go. Then it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah, so he halted the expedition. But note the number of David's followers here has increased. It's grown by 50% since the last tally. From 400 to now 600. People were tiring of Saul's tyranny. He's a madman, and I'm sure he treated other people just as he had treated David. Well, verse 14 tells us, and David stayed in strongholds in the wilderness and remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph, which was just west of the Dead Sea. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. Saul tabled his other duties. His sole pursuit was to track down David, that evil green monster called envy. Got control of Saul's life. He's traipsing around a barren wilderness of the Dead Sea while affairs of state go unnoticed. His whole goal in life is to kill David. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. What wonderful wording. He strengthened his hand in God. David needs some encouragement here, and it arrives in the form of an old friend named Jonathan. I love what Jonathan did for David. He strengthened his hand in God. Do you have a friend that strengthens your hand in God? If not, you need one. You need someone who will remind you of God's promises. You need someone that will strengthen your faith. You need someone who will get your eyes off of your problems and back on God. You need someone in your life who will strengthen your hand in God. Jonathan rallied David's faith. In the brief time of fellowship they had with each other, it refocused David on God's faithfulness, his unfailing promises. This is the power of a godly friendship. You know, it's been said, friends double our joys and divide our griefs. There have been so many times in my life when I've been down, when I've been discouraged, but God has been faithful to send a friend, a comforting friend, across my path to pick me up and get my eyes back where they need to be. Well, Jonathan said to David, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house. Then the Ziphites came up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, "Is David not hiding with us in strongholds in the woods, in the hill of Hakalah, which is on the south of Jezemon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of your soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand." You'd rather have Jonathan as a friend than the Ziphites. And Saul said, "Blessed are you of the Lord, for you have compassion on me. Please go and find out for sure and see the place where his hideout is and who has seen him there, for I am told he is very crafty." Oh my, Saul was the crafty one. "See therefore and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hides. And come back to me with certainty, and I will go with you. And it shall be, if he is in the land, that I will search for him throughout all the clans of Judah." So they arose, and they went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain on the south of Jezemon. When Saul and his men went to seek him, they told David. Notice the Ziphites were playing both sides here. They were telling Saul what he wanted to hear, and then they would come back and report to David what he wanted to hear. "Therefore, he went down to the rock, and he stayed in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued David in the wilderness of Maon." And all these places that are mentioned belong to what Israelis today call the Negev. Ever heard that word? It's a Hebrew word which means south. In 1867, Mark Twain paid a visit to the land of Israel, and he gave this description of the Negev, "a desolation that not even imagination can grace with the pomp of life and action." Years of arid weather, erosion, have turned the Negev into mostly desert. But in biblical times, there was some forest, and there was some vegetation, and there were some places where David could retreat and hide out. Both then and now, the temperature in the Negev can soar, upwards of 120 degrees at times. Psalm 63 is prefaced, a psalm of David when he was in the wilderness of Judah. It was probably written on a hot day down in the wilderness of Maon. And in Psalm 63, David writes, "My soul thirsts for you, O Lord, in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water." Well, Saul heard that David was down in Maon. Then Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. So David made haste to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were encircling David and his men to take them. Saul had outmaneuvered David, and he just about had him surrounded when suddenly God comes to the rescue. An act of providence saves David. Verse 27, "But a messenger came to Saul saying, 'Hasten and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land.' Therefore Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines, so they called that place the Rock of Escape." Psalm 54 is another psalm that is set in this passage of Scripture. It's prefaced, "A contemplation of David when the Ziphites went and said to Saul, 'Is David not hiding with us?'" Kind of pinpoints it right to this passage, doesn't it? Psalm 54, you might read it when you get home. Here are a few excerpts. "Save me, O God, by your name, and vindicate me by your strength. For strangers have risen up against me, and oppressors have sought after my life. They have not set God before them. Behold, God is my helper. The Lord is with those who uphold my life. He will repay my enemies for their evil. I will praise your name, O Lord, for it is good. For he has delivered me out of all trouble, and my eye has seen its desire upon my enemies." And indeed, God did deliver him out of trouble that day. Verse 29 tells us, "And then David went up from there and dwelt in strongholds at En-Gedi." And whenever we tour Israel, we always visit En-Gedi. It is a marvelous place. Today, it's a nature reserve on the western shore of the Dead Sea. It's really an oasis in the midst of the desert. En-Gedi is such a beautiful place. It's a sort of a little enclave of vegetation right there in the midst of the barren Dead Sea area. It's one of my favorite stops. There's fresh water and there's palm trees and there's bulrushes blowing in the breeze and waterfalls and all kinds of wildlife. En-Gedi is a beautiful place and no doubt one of the places that David hid out from Saul. You know, many of David's phrases from the Psalms, I think, come from his time in En-Gedi. Here are a few examples. "As the deer pants for the water brooks, so pants my soul for you, O God." He may have written that as he was watching a couple of deer lapping up the water out of a waterfall nearby. "He makes my feet like the feet of deer and sets me on high places." And you can go to En-Gedi and you can look up on the rocks that surround the oasis, and there are all kinds of animals that are, you know, for us, we'd barely be able to walk along those ledges, but they have those solid feet and those steady gates where they can climb all around the rocks and be secure. "Lead me to the rock that is higher than I, for you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy." And there are numerous caves all over the cliffs above En-Gedi. They're the perfect shelter from heat and wind and rain and Saul. They provide him, Israel's fugitive, the shelter that he needs. Well, chapter 24 begins. "Now it happened, when Saul had returned from following the Philistines, that it was told him, saying, 'Take note, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi.' Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men from all Israel and went to seek David and his men on the rocks of the wild goats." And today, when you go to En-Gedi, you'll notice the ibex or the wild mountain goats. They still roam the cliffs of En-Gedi, and sometimes they don't just roam the cliffs. Sometimes they come down into the parking lot to eat the trash you leave behind. The rocks of the wild goats. "So he came to the sheepfolds by the road where there was a cave, and Saul went in to attend to his needs." In other words, Saul stops for a potty break. Did you know that in ancient times, constipation was known as the curse of the kings? It's true. Apparently, the king's rich foods and the stress of his job made constipation a common ailment among royalty. Evidently, Saul had the opposite problem. He ducked into a cave to attend to his needs. David and his men were staying in the recesses of the cave. Oh, my. The lookout spotted Saul's troops. David ordered his men to hide in these caves above En-Gedi. Saul's caravan stops right in front of the cave that David and his chief leaders occupy. Talk about drama. Here it is. This is amazing. David can't believe it. Saul is just a few yards away. And when Saul comes in out of the bright sunlight into that dark cave, he can't see David's men in the shadows. His grunts must have drowned out their whispers. Verse 4 says, "Then the men of David said to him, 'This is the day of which the Lord said to you, behold, I will deliver your enemy into your hand, that you may do to him as it seems good to you.'" David, what an answer to prayer. God has arranged this encounter. Constipation is on our side. Here's an opportunity, David, for you to kill Saul before he kills you. And David arose and secretly cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Understand, the borders of a king or priest robe represented their authority. And to clip off the corner of a robe was actually an insult. It would be the equivalent of our slap in the face, a mockery of his office. David didn't kill Saul, but there was obviously a little bitterness in his heart, and he feels guilty about it. Verse 5. Now it happened afterward that David's heart troubled him because he had cut Saul's robe. And he said to his men, "The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, to stretch out my hand against him, seeing he is the anointed of the Lord." You know, Saul may have been a madman, but he was still God's man. And until God removed Saul, David's job was to respect the king. And David felt sorry. He felt guilty for having mocked the king and clipped off his robe. Remember, David was a man motivated by principle, not just convenience. David was a man who was internally motivated, not motivated by circumstance. And so David restrained his servants with these words and did not allow them to rise against Saul. And Saul got up from the cave and went on his way. Hey, in our battle with wickedness, we need to remember that a good cause doesn't justify wicked tactics. A good cause doesn't justify wicked tactics. Our enemy beats us only when he gets us to act like him. As Romans 12, verse 21 tells us, overcome evil with good. Don't fight evil for evil. Overcome evil with good. In his book, A Tale of Three Kings, I recommend it. It's a wonderful book. Gene Edwards imagines the conversation between one of David's men, Joab, and David himself after Saul had left the cave. Listen to these words. Joab complains, "Why, David, why? Many times he almost speared you in the castle. Finally, you run away. Now, for years, you've been nothing but a rabbit for him to chase. Furthermore, the whole world believes the lies he tells about you. He has come hunting every cave and pit and hole to find you and kill you like a dog. But tonight, you had him at the end of his own spear, and you did nothing. Look at us. We're animals again. Less than an hour ago, you could have freed us all. Why, David? Why did you not end these years of misery?" There was a long silence. David slowly and with a gentleness said, "Because once, long ago, he was not mad. He was young. He was great. Great in the eyes of God and men. And it was God who made him king. God, not men." Joab blazed back, "But now he's mad, and God is no longer with him. And David, he will yet kill you." This time, it was David's answer that blazed with fire. He said, "Better he kill me than I learn his ways. Better he kill me than I become as he is. I shall not practice the ways that cause kings to go mad. I will not throw spears, nor allow hatred to grow in my heart. I will not avenge, not now, not ever."
In the book of 1 Samuel, you get to meet a boy who became a man, helping guide and counsel others after him. The era of the kings of Israel began with the events of this book of the Bible. As you read along, you notice that some people followed God with all their heart. Others seemed to waver, depending on how the situation would benefit them. What is the state of your interactions with God? Do you follow him wholeheartedly, or does it depend on if it'll help you out in the circumstances that you're in? It's definitely something to ponder as you listen and learn more about these characters in the Bible. There's always something for you to gain from those who have lived before you. Spend time praying today, asking the Lord to reveal the areas in your life that may be showing your commitment to God or lack thereof. You've been listening to Sandy Adams Radio today with our pastor and teacher, Sandy Adams. To learn more about this ministry, head over to sandyadams.org. Once again, that's sandyadams.org. While you're there, check out Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain under the About tab. You could even stop by and see us this weekend. The details of where we meet and when can be found once you follow the link to Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. Well, that's all we have time for today, but we'll catch up with you next time on Sandy Adams Radio.